From the four corners of Southern California, this is the Hot Seat and Urine It with me, Max Schwartz. It starts right now, today on the phone, as yet another special guest from the state legislature. I have State Senator Ted Lieu from the 28th District. How are you, Senator Lieu? Thank you very much for taking the time to call into the Hot Seat this afternoon.
Thank you. I'm honored to be with you, Max.
Well, thank you very much, and it's an honor to have you. I would like to mention two points before we start. First is Senator Lieu is also a lieutenant colonel in the United States Air Force Reserves. And second, Senator Lieu is also a candidate for the 33rd Congressional District seat. However, this interview will only be about Ted Lieu, the state senator, and the questions reflect that. We have a lot to cover, so I do not want to say any more. Now, without further ado, let's get started. And you just wrapped up a press conference, and I just saw the press release in my email that you are working on an initiative to launch an investigation into safety procedures at LAX. Would you mind explaining that?
Sure. LAX is in my Senate district, and I've worked on issues related to the airport since I was in the Assembly in 2006. I was a strong supporter of the Passenger Bill of Rights. And it's clear to me that there are a lot of workers at LAX that do things on a daily basis that help passengers behind the scenes, cargo handling, baggage moving. And some of those workers do work in hazardous conditions. Since 2006, there's already been three deaths of employees of a contractor called Menzies Aviation. Last year, Menzies Aviation was assessed $95,000 in fines by Cal OSHA. And to me, it looks like there may be a pattern in practice of safety violations. I'm calling for state oversight hearing to see whether the working conditions are unsafe and what changes can be made so that we don't have additional deaths. As you may know, a Cesar Valenzuela passed away while working at LAX a few weeks ago. And he was an employee of Menzies Aviation, and we're investigating what happened there and also see if there's any systematic changes we need to do.
And what do you hope this investigation is able to accomplish?
First of all, to see if there are systematic issues, because when a contractor has $95,000 in fines, to me that should raise all sorts of red flags. But I want to know, are there other contractors at LAX that also received fines from Cal OSHA? And what about other airports around the state? How safe are the working conditions for these airport workers?
Okay. And because this is still developing, we'll talk to you hopefully before the end of your state senate term, and we'll get an update on this situation. But I would now like to move to a situation that is current, where they're in the midst of, which is the California drought, and it is currently a very bad one. However, the most recent rain spell did help us a little bit. There was a bill passed by the legislature regarding drought relief. Would you mind explaining what that bill does and how much it's going to cost?
Sure. Well, we accelerate funding for a lot of drought relief programs throughout the state. And as you may recall, when Governor Schwarzenegger was in office, we also had a drought in California. So this is something that Mother Nature does to our state every now and then, and we need to be better prepared for it. That's why I'm also hopeful that we can have a water bond this year that will also provide funding for drought relief and to better prepare our state for future droughts, which will invariably happen.
What specifically does the money, first of all, you said that you're accelerating money. Where is that money coming from?
There are multiple programs up and down the state.
Okay.
For drought relief, and just for water conservation, water recycling, for better irrigation. There are multiple ways to tackle the water issue. To me, the best way is to conserve, reuse, and recycle. In my district, for example, we have El Segundo, and that city is amazing. Nearly half of its water is recycled. And if we can do a better job of groundwater capture, of using additional ways to make sure we stop water from going into our oceans when it's polluted and to capture some of that and have it go into a groundwater basin and then reuse and recycle the water, that would be ways we can help conserve water now and for the future.
Specifically, though, what does the bond, is there one thing, I'm sorry, not the bond, but the bill, what does the bond actually do, or is it like what you said where it helps those individual programs up and down the state?
So there's multiple things going on because water is very complex. You have sort of, a drought relief package where we focus on funding, but also the water bond that is going to be billions of dollars that can go to help improve our water supply, both reliability and just having more water when we need it. As you may know, part of this is also related to climate change, which is one of my top priorities. And we're getting, less water in our snow caps. We're getting water at the wrong time. And it is all interconnected. So not only do we need, the drought relief package, we need a water bond, we also need to do more on climate change. So everything to be interconnected.
Okay. And you, again, Matt, the drought relief bill cost, I believe, $685 million or $1 billion?
Million.
So you said that money's coming from, that money's being accelerated. Where is it being accelerated from?
So there's these existing programs where we're going to get them more funding. We have just a variety of different sources at the state level. If you want, I can send you a whole packet of material on the drought relief bill if you would like to see it.
That would be fantastic. And continuing on now about the drought, you are a member of the Agriculture Committee.
Yes.
What is the Agriculture Committee specifically, unless the drought relief bill was it? What is the Agriculture Committee specifically doing about the drought and drought relief for the agriculture part of our economy?
So take a guess as to how much water agriculture uses compared to the rest of the population. Do you have any sense?
I'd assume it's slightly more than half?
It's about 80%.
Okay.
A huge amount. And so what I'd like to see is more drip irrigation in the Central Valley and in our agriculture communities. That is generally a more efficient way to distribute water to agriculture. I'd like to see them do a better job of conservation and reuse and recycle. But at the same time, keep in mind, agriculture is also, one of California's competitive advantages. We provide, most of the lettuce to North America. We provide most of the pistachios to the rest of the world. It's an amazing breadbasket of products that we do provide to North America and the rest of the world. And it is one of our advantages, and I would like to see agriculture thrive in California. But it is an enormously heavy user of water. We need to be more efficient in how we get water to them and how they use water.
Are the plans that you just talked about, are those things that you personally want to do that are in committee right now, or is the committee not even there yet?
Oh, no. The committee is very aware of the drought issue, and so everyone is looking at ways to increase the efficiency of water use by the agriculture community. And so every option is on the table, and the hearing will happen throughout this year. But when a drought comes, it really focuses attention on what we need to do.
But in terms of, say, your more drip irrigation that you're pushing for, is that something that's in committee yet, or is it not there yet?
It is not there yet. So there's different possible solutions. So let me give you an example. We have in California something called the Carl Moyer Program and other programs that will provide funding for people to retrofit engines to make them more efficient, make them cleaner. Well, I have an idea of, well, why don't we do a similar program like that and have agriculture communities and folks retrofit their irrigation system so that it's more efficient. And so we're exploring that avenue right now. The committee hearings don't sort of start happening till later in March and then April and May.
And are you willing to put these ideas of yours into bills for the committee to consider?
Yes, if they pan out and make fiscal sense, absolutely.
Okay. And in terms of, as you said, agriculture is a big part, I believe. It's at least, we supply the nation, 50% of the nation's agriculture or produce, I should say. What will you do, or what will the committee do, to make sure that the drought does not cause a rapid increase or a substantial increase in the price of produce and other goods that are produced here in California?
Well, if the drought happens for a long time, there's not much we can do.
Okay.
It's just going to increase prices, which is why we're, you know, looking at different solutions to try to have water be used more efficiently in the Central Valley and other agriculture communities.
Okay. And President Obama went to the Central Valley, which now is about 4 weeks ago. Do you think his words accomplish anything in terms of actual action and morale, in improving morale?
Yes, I think it was tremendously important that the President of the United States showed up to show that he understood the gravity of the issue and that his office, the power of his office, is going to be utilized to try to help the agriculture communities in California. So I think it was a powerful statement that he showed up, and we all look forward to working with the federal government to try to, again, make water use more efficient and to get more water to where it's needed in our agriculture community.
And he has also said he's willing to put money forward. Has the state of California done anything with the resources President Obama has said he would give?
I'm absolutely positive Governor Brown is working closely with the administration on those issues.
Okay. And one more note about the federal portion of this, and that is that John Boehner was also in the Central Valley, and congressional Republicans have put forth a bill that the president has said he will not sign, or his advisors have said that. What do you think it means that you have Republicans, some of which who aren't necessarily from this state, are behind drought relief, and do you think that money that Republicans would like to put forward would be useful?
Well, I clearly would prefer a bipartisan solution, but at the same time, I'm not going to, you know, support gutting environmental laws in order to, you know, increase water usage. I do support efforts by President Obama. I support efforts by, you know, our federal senators, Senators Feinstein and Boxer. And I hope a bipartisan solution can be found.
Okay. And now I'd like to move on. Speaking of lawmakers, I'd like to move on into the legislature now. And we are currently in the second session of the 2013-14 legislative session. What are your thoughts on how this year is going?
I think it's going well. And to understand this year in context, let me just take you down memory lane about 5 years ago when California was facing many of the issues that America is facing today. We were in deep political gridlock. We had a budget deficit of over $40 billion, and we were on the verge of a government shutdown. But we didn't do that. I was on the Speaker of the Assembly's leadership team. We worked together with legislators across the aisle. We worked with their executive branch. And we made some very difficult decisions. We stabilized the state of California, made some very difficult decisions the following year, provided a foundation for which to grow. And now this year, we have an over $2 billion budget surplus. Our unemployment is the lowest in nearly 5 years. And we have increased funding to education, and that's going to be projected to increase for the next 7 years. So things are going well, and California, in my opinion, has turned the corner, and we just need to make sure that our economic recovery grows faster. It is still, to me, too slow right now, but at least it is trending in a positive direction.
Okay, and would you say that this session is productive?
Yes. Now, as you know, we're still early in the session, and that's why a lot of committee hearings haven't actually happened yet. But so far, things are going well.
Okay, and you say that committee hearings, many committee hearings haven't happened yet. Well, then what has been happening up in Sacramento?
So in California, when you introduce a bill, there's a 30-day waiting period before anything happens. That gives time for the public and stakeholders to look at that bill. And so the bill introduction deadline was, in February, and when people introduce bills and they wait 30 days, nothing will really happen very much in terms of committee hearing until sort of, you know, later in March, April, and May. What you do for the first couple months is you work on bills and bill ideas and making sure you vet your bills so you can put the best product out there when you introduce it.
Okay. And speaking of the legislature and allowing for the public to comment, If a constituent was to come up to you and ask you, what have you accomplished in 2014 or 2013 to positively affect his or her quality of life in the 28th District, what would you say?
Well, again, in 2013, we put in a structurally balanced on-time budget with a projected surplus. Now it's 2014, and in fact, we do have a surplus. We also reduce unemployment to lowest in nearly 5 years. We increased funding for education last year. We increased it again this year, and we are going forward with implementing some of the restoration of cuts that we've done to help improve the quality of lives for all Californians.
Okay. And what specifically have you done, and what have your various committees done this year, if anything?
Well, again, this year is early,
yeah.
Right? I've introduced several key bills. I do believe that earthquakes are an important issue for my district and the rest of California. We know that there are 7,000 miles of earthquake faults. We also know that 5,000 of these miles have been zoned, meaning that if you want to build on those earthquake faults, you need to be at least 50 feet away from the actual fault. Because if you put a building over earthquake fault, it's going to collapse during earthquake, no matter how strong you make it, because the ground movement is different. It will shear the building. There are about 2,000 miles of earthquake faults that have been mapped, but technically not zoned. And as a result of that technical loophole, cities and developers have just ignored the fact that there are earthquake faults sitting there, and they built buildings on those faults. And it's completely insane that that happened. So, unfortunately, as of today, you've got buildings sitting on and over earthquake faults along the Santa Monica earthquake fault as well as the Hollywood earthquake fault in Los Angeles. And I want to stop future occurrences of that happening. So I introduced legislation that says, look, for the remaining earthquake faults, of which we know where they are in terms of being mapped, you also have to have a set aside of 75 feet from the earthquake fault. Because just because it's technically not zoned doesn't mean we don't know where it is, because we do know where it is. We know where the fault is to a precision of about 50 feet. So it is something we're trying to do to prevent future occurrences of developers building residential and commercial buildings on earthquake fault. In terms of last year, I'm very proud that my bill to ban harmful gay conversion therapy for minors went into effect. It was the first in the nation. It's now been replicated by 8 other states that have introduced it. New Jersey has actually passed a very similar version of my law, and my law was also recently upheld by 9th Circuit Court of Appeal. And so I'm very proud that that happened.
Okay. And speaking of the earthquake faults, we're seeing that debate happen right now in Hollywood, where one of the California departments was held a field hearing there the other day, yesterday, about what was going on there. I would like to move on now and specifically talk about your district. There are 2 assembly districts to every state Senate district, and 50th District Assemblyman Richard Bloom and 62nd District Assemblyman Stephen Bradford are the 2 whose districts overlap with your district. Is that correct?
For many districts, there are 2 assembly districts per Senate district. My district's a little different. There's actually more than 2. So
okay.
In addition to Assemblymember Bloom and Assemblymember Bradford, we also have Assemblymember Sebastian Ridley Thomas as part of the district, and we have Assemblymember Al Murasuchi that also has part of the district.
Okay. Well, I apologize for having that incorrect, but thank you for clarifying. And how do you work with the members of the assembly whose district overlap with yours in Sacramento and in the district?
We have a great working relationship. We will often seek to co-author each other's legislation. I have, been a floor jockey for legislation of my assembly members and vice versa. So we have a very good cooperative relationship.
Okay. And if a constituent has an issue or is having a problem with a government agency, should they call you or their representative in the assembly?
They can do either. They should feel free to just call my district office up. The phone number is 310-318-6994. I'm also available on Twitter and Facebook, and I will respond to constituent matters directly as well. And There's a variety of ways to reach me in my office.
Okay. And you are from the Torrance area, or Torrance, the city itself, which is in the southern part of the district. What have you done to make yourself known in the northern portion of your district, which extends all the way up the coast, or most of the way up the coast until the county line?
So first of all, I'm very happy to actually live in the district I represent, and my children go to school in the district. Through my legislation and advocacy of key issues, so the environment has been critical to my district. It's a very coastal district. I'm very proud that as a result of a bill I authored, Senate Bill 1066, in January of this year, over $3 million in climate change grants were awarded to cities like Los Angeles and to organizations like Kyoto Bay and other places throughout California and throughout my district. I've also been involved with issues related to Santa Monica in terms of reducing noise and air pollution there, and also the housing issues that Santa Monica has had. And I've been involved with various issues in terms of the LGBT community in the northern part of their district. So there's a variety of issues that I've worked on and will continue to work on and to champion.
Okay. And I got one more line of questioning in terms of the district area, and that is regarding your district map. And when I look at it, it is very confusing because your district is changing to number 26 next year. So is there, other than the number, is anything else changing? Is the area changing? Because I see on your map there are deferred areas to Lou and accelerated areas. Would you mind explaining what those are too?
Sure. So the number is changing in 26. And the reason that you see deferred accelerated areas is basically some of the places are actually represented by two senators. And that's a quirk of the redistricting process. So let me give you an example. You have, for example, the city of Carson, which I currently represent. But it's also represented by another senator. At the end of this year, I will no longer represent Carson, and then it will become the sole jurisdiction of the other senator. There are also other places that currently had no senator when their senator left, such as Santa Monica. So Senator Fran Pavley, for example, when she ran in her new district and was elected 2 years ago, Santa Monica lost its senator. So then I became the senator for Santa Monica. And that's, in addition to working with Santa Monica, you know, since I was in assembly, I also have had sort of a representation for Santa Monica since, you know, 2012 when Senator Pavley left it. So it is a little confusing, but in November of this year, the accelerated deferred areas, I'll become part of the district.
Okay, and in terms of the number change, when it becomes 26, do you add any area, or are you just, other than the deferred and accelerated portions?
No, what you see on the map with deferred accelerated then becomes part of the district.
Okay, so there are no other geographic area.
Right, right.
Okay. And now I'd like to move on to your committee specifically, and I know we're running short on time, so I have a lot I'd like to get through. I would like to first talk about government agencies that have been in the news recently. The first is the Los Angeles County Probation Department. This relates to you as a senator, and this is a government agency, not exactly your committee. But what was your reaction when you saw the report that most probation alerts in the email inboxes were not being looked at?
That was surprising, and I do hope LA County looked into it. I am chair of the State Business Profession and Economic Development Committee. So we have oversight over state agencies. And right now I've been conducting oversight hearings. So, for example, we recently had an oversight hearing on the State Department for Consumer Protection. And, you know, we deal with the state-level agencies, not so much sort of the county-level agencies.
Okay. Yes, I understand that. I was just asking your question. I was asking that question as a senator who represents an area in LA County. But specifically moving on your committees, you are on the Senate Insurance Committee. And when the EDD, Employment Development Department, has been in the news recently, one for missing 80-90% of phone calls. And the other is that there is action within the last few days and today about an investigation. So as a member of the Senate Insurance Committee, did you and your fellow members know that 80 to 90% of the phone calls were being unanswered?
So the Senate Insurance Committee doesn't have jurisdiction over EDD. That's actually part of the Senate Labor and Industrial Relations Committee.
Okay.
However, I am familiar with the issue, and a few months ago I did call on EDD to reform itself and fix these problems because it's just not acceptable what's happening. But keep in mind, part of the problem has to do with, a lack of federal funding. The sequester hit EDD hard. The government shutdown hit EDD hard. So they're also trying to do the best they can because a lot of what they do also does rely on direct federal funding for direct positions being funded by federal money.
Okay. And you are also a member of the Veterans Committee. There is a bond about the Veterans Project, or about veteran money, I should say, on the ballot. What are your thoughts on that bond?
I fully support it, and I believe we need to do much more in terms of veterans housing. I think it is shameful that we have so many homeless veterans, not just in California, but also particularly in L.A. County.
Okay. And one more, I have a question about one government agency for you, and that would be the Department of Toxic Substances and Control. And that is, last year the LA Times reported that more than 50 tons of toxic waste is missing. And as chair of the Air Quality Select Committee, is this agency under your jurisdiction?
So first of all, the fact that they can't track that is deeply alarming, and I really hope that they can get to the bottom of it. But to answer your question is complicated. It depends. So they deal more with sort of matters related to the ground and to the soil and less so with the air. So it does sort of depend on exactly what the pollutant is, where the pollutant resides, and how it's affecting people.
Okay, so are you or one of the other members of the committee, or for that matter, a senator as a whole, looking at doing something about this agency?
The Standing Environmental Quality Committees are looking at that, yes.
Okay. As a senator yourself, you said it's deeply alarming, and I was very alarmed as well. Is anything being done about this?
Yeah. So the Standing Environmental Quality Committees have jurisdiction specifically over DTSC, are looking into it.
Do you know what they're doing?
I don't sit on those committees, so I'll give you materials on that.
Okay, and continuing on about this, just one more question. I want to see what your opinion is, because although I'm asking most of the legislators I'm talking to this question, their director, Debbie Raphael, has declined to call into the hot seat, and she has declined interviews with the LA Times. Do you believe her media request declines prevent her from being held accountable by the media?
No, it's up to agency directors whether they want to talk to the media, but they absolutely need to talk to the relevant standing oversight committee. And if they don't, the Senate has the ability to subpoena them to testify. I don't know where that process is, but I'm absolutely certain the relevant standing environmental quality committees are deeply looking at this issue.
Okay, and one more question for you before we run out of time, and that is, you are working to promote the state's creative economy. For those who don't know, what is it, and what are you trying to do?
So the Otis College of Art and Design has put out a report that shows that 1 in 7 jobs in L.A. County is related to the creative economy, and statewide it's 1 in 10. So this is a huge part of the economy. It's something California can compete in and do well. I believe we're not going to compete in California making stocks. Our land value is too high. Our wages are too high. In those areas where we have a competitive advantage, and arts and creativity and innovation is one of them. That's why we're seeing, Silicon Beach growing in Santa Monica and Venice and in that part of my district. And, arts and entertainment, fashion design, furniture design, toy design, all sorts of things are happening in California, and we're doing well in them. And one of these is film and TV production. One of our brands in California is Hollywood, and it is film and TV. So I am a principal co-author of the legislation this year to increase and to extend our film and television tax credit. We actually need to do more to compete with other states to keep this vital industry in California.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that, Senator Liu, and I appreciate you taking the time to join me in the hot seat this afternoon. It was an absolute pleasure to have you, and we would love to have you on before the end of your term.
Thank you. We're happy to do that again.
Oh, fantastic. The Hot Seat After Hour starts right now. You can email the Hot Seat inbox at thehotseatwithmaxschwartz@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at MaxSchwartzTV. You can also read and follow my blog at maxschwartztv.blogspot.com. You can subscribe to the Hot Seat's newsletter by clicking on the link on our page. Go to annenbergradio.org/podcast, click on the link underneath the Hot Seat's description, and enter your email address. Thank you for listening. I hope you will join me next time with State Senator Holly Mitchell.